How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the latest Raymond Jays podcast. I am John Corrales here, and I need to start with breaking news. If you listened to the last show, at the end of the last show, Jay King and I had a little problem, a little disagreement, a little bit of a falling out, for lack of a better term, over basketball movies. Jay requested a trade, and our breaking news, we were able to accommodate his request, so Jay King has been sent to Celtic Stuff Live along with a conditional first-round pick, and we have acquired, I'm very happy to say, John Duke from Celtic Stuff Live, now co-host of the Rain and Jays podcast. John Duke, welcome to the show. I appreciate this, man. This is so, it's like a reunion of sorts. You're coming back home.
It is. It's been great. Certainly, didn't have to change the didn't have to change the name. And really glad to be here.
Hold
love
on.
The show.
Yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah, no. Just fighting something off. I'll be fine. Yeah. Excuse me. Right. Sorry.
I want to make sure that we're good, because we still have some final details to finish off with this trade. I want to make sure that you're good, because this is a big deal for us, you know, to switch midstream like this. I want to make sure you're good.
Well, yeah, you know, I feel good. You know, I'm loaded up with all kinds of vitamins and all that. Yeah.
Hold on, the medical team has just given me.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing. The medical team has given me the results of your physical here, and
all good, right? Yep.
No, you failed. Right. You failed your physical.
What? that's impossible.
No, you have a long term apparent throat issue, Doc Riversitis.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's I'm sorry. Oh wow.
Jeez. Listen, it's on Blake. This one's on Blake.
I'm sorry to say this, but the Reds Army front office is actually rescinding this trade.
What?
We have to rescind this trade.
That's outrageous.
No.
Don't send me back there, man.
I'm sorry. Terrible. I mean, we've had our good times, and I was looking forward to you coming back, but I can't, in good conscience, for the best of the Reigning Jays podcast, make a long-term commitment to you with this kind of medical information. So it's nothing personal, John, but
whatever.
You're going to have to go back to your show with Justin, and I wish you all the best.
Yeah, well, thanks for nothing. Doc said I'm fine. I don't know what your issue is, but good luck or something. And go watch some basketball movies, Corrales, for crying out loud.
Okay, so I guess, since that trade was rescinded, we're going to have to bring Jay King back to Reigning Jays. Jay?
Yeah, I feel like Pau Gasol, when the Chris Paul trade was vetoed and he knew he could have been on the way out and they were looking to move him, and then he went back to L.A. and it never felt the same again. And he needed to go to Chicago to kind of lift himself back up. I might need to request a trade somewhere down the line. This is not the end of the Reigning Jays trade requests. This is only the beginning. And the fact that I had to be connected with a first-round pick is a little disappointing. Hopefully I'll make you feel like Ryan McDonough where you regret even offering that trade somewhere down the line.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're going the Boogie Cousins route and throwing a tantrum over this rather than being professional. Try not to make this awkward.
Professional isn't really something I do very much, especially when I'm traded. I've never been traded before. This is the first time. It's a different feeling.
Well, technically, you haven't been traded now. It's just a thing that happened. So
yeah.
Let's just try to put it behind us and talk about basketball, if we could.
Fine. I guess I can try.
I appreciate it. The Celtics, fresh off a big win over the Miami Heat, and a huge win in the sense that it solidifies their hold on the third seed. They're now two games up, and they get a tiebreaker. So they're essentially three games up over Miami because they own the tiebreaker. So, and it's their 10th win in a row at home. So big swings for the Celtics, and they – particularly impressive, Jay, is that they came out – horribly. They played horribly at the beginning and they ran away with it at the end, which is a really good sign.
Yeah, and your boy Evan Turner had a huge second quarter to kind of bring them back in. Yeah, I mean, he was great in the second. He's had so many games where he's had clutch moments, whether it's in the fourth quarter or when the other teams had a run. He's just been really useful off the bench. And I know you didn't like him at the beginning of the season. But every week we have this conversation now where Evan Turner has done something good, and he did it again. And then Miami is a team that Brad Stevens raved about how hard they play, their culture, everything. And then the Celtics just were on another level. When you've got Jared Sullinger beating Justice Winslow to a loose ball, that's when you know your team is playing hard.
Yeah. You know.
My favorite moment of the game was after that play, he threw it ahead to Avery Bradley. And as Avery Bradley was finishing the layup, Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow were sitting like with their backs to each other at midcourt, like just completely dazed, confused. They had just been beaten by Jared Sullinger to a loose ball. And that was kind of the symbol of the game. Just the Celtics played harder and the Heat were just left there sitting at midcourt wondering what the heck just happened.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I feel like I continually have to justify my Evan Turner stuff. I never not liked Evan Turner, the person, the player. I never was like, I don't care what he does, I just hate the guy. I hated the way he was playing. He was playing terribly. And now he's playing well. I can freely admit that when he's playing well and when he's playing poorly, I hope that people understand that it wasn't completely irrational that I didn't like what he was doing on the floor. Like, I was justified in not liking what he was doing on the floor. And I try to be, not to pull a Tangway here, but I call him like I see him. But that's what I thought at the time, that he was playing poorly. And now he's playing well. I'm not sitting here like, you know, as soon as my Evan Turner jersey comes in the mail, you know, maybe I'll change my tune a little bit. Actually, at Celtics Welch asked me, thoughts on people wearing jerseys of guys younger than them. If you don't mind it, John, have you ordered your Turner jersey yet? So that was, I don't care if people wear jerseys. You want to wear a jersey to a game. That's cool. That's fine. Just my only thing personally, like, don't bro out and show us how much you lift by wearing an extra medium jersey. You know, you want to wear like the small Isaiah Thomas jersey, but you're like a 6 foot tall dude who, like, okay, we get it. You can bench a lot. Like, don't be that guy. That's my random thought on the jerseys.
John does not like strong Celtics fans.
Okay, let's get into a little bit more of a discussion. We're going to bring in our guest today. Sean Devaney of the Sporting News, who is joining us, our first guest. Sean, thanks for joining us. Let's just get into this. I think people still want to get back to the trade deadline. Still a big topic of conversation for us. So from your perspective, from what you saw and what your sources were telling you, what were the Celtics trying to do? What were their goals at the trade deadline?
Well, you know, it's been the same goal that it's been for the last few transaction periods, whether you talk about last year's trade deadline or last year, last year's offseason, the summer of last year, the draft of last year. You know, if you look at what Danny has tried to do every single time, it's take the assets he has and see if he can consolidate and move them for a star player and sort of upgrade the overall talent level. That's been the approach every single time, and this time was no different. I think he's gotten to a point where he's in a much better position and he can start having better conversations, even if nothing comes out of it. I think a lot of groundwork was laid for the summer in terms of, okay, what's going to be next with this team? Are they going to be able to get that that star player, and how good of a star player is this that they're going to be able to get? So I think that the approach that they've had has been pretty consistent all along. I think they're just in a better position now because they have sort of raised the level of talent overall on that roster.
One of the questions that Jay and I have debated on the show in the past is whether there's a sort of expiration date on some of these assets, because the Celtics have at least three first-round picks, and they control 15% of the draft coming up, but they've got a pretty stacked roster and a lot of young guys, and I believe 9 guaranteed contracts. And so I guess the question is, are they going to have to make, what if they do have to make all of those picks? Is there a way for them to get out of that, or is this going to be a problem for them?
No, yeah, and I think that's something that other teams have understood when they go into a negotiation with the Celtics, and why there's been some frustration from Ainge in the front office in terms of what they've been able to get done or where they run into roadblocks with these things is, you're right. That other teams know that, hey, do they really want 4 rookies? Or maybe we will be better off waiting to see, where their picks fall in the lottery. And then kind of get them when they're a little more up against the wall in that last week of June, heading into the draft, So I think that's been one of the sources of frustration from the Celtics, is that they know they have these assets, but, once you start to, force their hand a little bit, it becomes much tougher for them to make a deal. So I do think that's been sort of in the back of the minds of teams that are dealing with the Celtics, and one reason the Celtics haven't been able to sort of get over that hump in terms of pulling off the kind of trade that they're looking for.
So does this mean they're going to have to overpay? Are they going to have to give in to some of these teams' requests and overpay for some of the things that they're looking for?
Yeah, we already saw them try to do that, right? Last year at the draft, they were ready to overpay to get Justice Winslow, and that's sort of is the position that you're in. Is it's so strange to see how some teams value draft picks and how other teams sort of shrug them off a little bit. Teams that tend to really want to protect their own draft picks, when it comes to trading for other draft picks, it kind of gets a little dodgy, and I think that's the situation the Celtics have found themselves in. So, I do think it's a situation that eventually they are going to have to overpay, but I think they're still in a position where they're going to have to overpay by giving up too many unknown assets. That's the thing, is that they're still unknown assets, and you might have some of these picks wind up turning into players who don't really produce very much. You might have some of the young guys that they might include not turn into very much. So, that's the thing, is you're still giving up unknown quantities trying to find that known quantity, and that's not a bad position to be in if you're the Celtics, because I do think we will see over this summer that some of the names that were sort of running through the trade rumor mill, I think we're going to wind up seeing those names right back in the same place again in July.
Really? Like who?
Well, Kevin Love. Certainly, look, I don't think Cleveland's going to win a championship this year, and who do you think is going to take the fall? It's not going to be LeBron. It's not going to be Kyrie Irving. It's not going to be Tyronn Lue. Who's left? It's going to be Kevin Love. So I think you'll see him back on the market. I think if the Clippers fade out, as they almost always do, if they have another second round exit And it looks like they will. They're not going to beat Golden State. They're not going to beat San Antonio. So if they have another second round exit, I think you'll see Blake Griffin at least be discussed again. At least Doc Rivers is going to have to, you know, sit back and listen to more offers for him. So, you know, those are a couple of names. I think Goran Dragic is a guy, you know, if things don't work out in Miami and things sort of keep coming apart, I think he's a guy that they might try to get ahead of his contract a little bit and possibly move him. DeMarcus Cousins will certainly come up again, of course. You know, I think a lot of the big names we heard, even though you had the team saying, no, nothing's going to happen, I think that you're going to see a lot of that. You know, when you talk to GMs around the league, the impression is that that what was happening this past couple weeks was you saw a lot of groundwork being laid. It wasn't necessarily that the deals were going to be made at the deadline, but those are deals that will come back up in July.
One of the guys that was brought up to hear Danny Ainge talk in the immediate aftermath of the trade deadline was Jahlil Okafor, and he was saying a lot of those things where we didn't get a deal done, but we feel good about revisiting it potentially later. And this was before Okafor's name came out, but now it seems to be, everybody seems to agree that, okay, yeah, that's legit. That was the name. Is this something that you think we should be watching for as Philly tries to kind of refocus? They've redone their power structure a little bit over there, and they have the potential Joel Embiid coming back. So is that something that you think there's some fire there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no question that that was a move that they were considering, that Philly was considering, and that they'll have to consider again, especially, like I say, as we get closer to the draft, you have a better understanding of what the Celtics actually have in terms of the lottery. And, you know, I think that is definitely something that that Philly would come back to. I don't think the Celtics would overpay for Okafor. You know, they want somebody who they know is going to be able to produce at a high level. And I think Okafor, there's still a lot of questions about him, not just off the floor, but still on the floor as well. So, you know, I don't think that's a guy that they're necessarily going to overpay for. But, you know, there's no question that Philadelphia considered moving him, and will certainly be right back there again when we get around draft time.
So all of this being said, and you see the team a lot, if you were Danny Ainge, what would your priorities be for the Celtics?
You know, I still think you need that star player. I think as nice as this team has been and as much fun as they are to watch, I think you know that if you're not going to, you know, compete for a championship, then you've got to think about, all right, well, what's next? That, you know, being a 45, 46 win team year in and year out, that kind of gets stuck in the middle of that draft order, you know, picking 17. And, you know, when you get stuck like that, you know, that's something that, that you really don't want to be in that limbo. Now, of course, they have the benefit of owning Brooklyn's picks for the next few years. So they will be in a little bit of a different position, and that allows you to maybe not be too hasty in terms of how you approach this. But I still think you need to, you know, sit back and consistently swing for the fences in terms of getting that star player. But again, you know, I mean, you're not in a bad position where you are, you know, winning those 45, 46 games. You know, you don't want to be there going forward, but, you know, certainly you can live with that, and you've done a nice job rebuilding. But I still think you need to swing for the fences, you know, when those opportunities arise. And Danny's done that every single time, and there's no reason to think that that he won't continue to do that.
Is there anybody on this team that, in that scenario, then would you consider untouchable in a trade?
No, I don't think so. You know, I really don't think that there's anybody who you wouldn't give up. You know, as much as you like Isaiah Thomas and you know, as much as Jay Crowder has really proven to be such a huge value for what they're paying him, you know, I don't think any of those guys is going to keep you from making that blockbuster trade. Now, having said that, you're certainly not out there trying to trade Isaiah Thomas or Crowder, but you know, I think there's nobody on this team that that would make me say no, you can't trade him. One thing about Isaiah Thomas and that you have to consider when you're doing this is, you know, if you want to sign free agents, he's very well liked around the league, and so you do need sort of that face of the franchise that you can have, you know, hey, can you text this guy and you know, tell him to, you know, at least give us a visit and stuff like that. You know, he is valuable in ways that are, you know, maybe not just measured on the floor, but in terms of how you're building your roster. So there are things like that to consider. But in terms of, you know, would you make a deal if it included Isaiah Thomas, if it was one that was really going to improve your team? Yeah, I think you'd have to.
All right, let's move a little bit to the NBA before we let you go, since you do cover the entire league. Is Steph Curry human?
You know, it's a good question, and I think he is eminently human, and I think that helps explain why everybody loves him. I was up in Toronto and saw him and saw how he interacted with people, and obviously he was there for a little, you know, his dad was there, so, you know, he has some ties, but just, you know, when you see him, you know, if you go over to Warriors practice when they were here at Emerson, and there was just such a huge crowd there. Obviously, look, that's a popular team, but it's mostly him. And everybody loves him. And I think one of the reasons they love him is because he is human. He just, look at him. I mean, he doesn't look that different than, you know, your average kid out there, you know, trying to work on his 3-point game. So, you know, I think I think his humanity is one of the reasons why he is so immensely popular. But certainly when you look at what he does, when he's in the zone like he was last night, then you start to wonder if the guy's maybe part robot.
That was amazing to watch last night. I just couldn't. I was out, and the entire bar was just up and down, and there were no allegiances. Everybody was just going nuts seeing that. And when he hit that 35-footer or whatever, it was just the entire place almost came down. And one more thing. There's a lot of this talk about front offices and guys being hired, and Sean Marks was just hired by Brooklyn, and guys are being shuffled in and out of front offices, and now there's a lot of discussion about minorities running teams, and there's some talk about potentially instituting the so-called Rooney Rule, which the NFL has, for the NBA. Just give me, if you could, some general thoughts on that. Is there any momentum for something like that in the league?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, certainly there was a time, if you go back about 10, 15 years ago, you know, there was a time where there were a lot of minorities running teams, and you saw it, you really would not have thought it to be much of an issue, but the direction it's gone has been the opposite, and you can say it's cyclical, and chances are it is, but, you know, what the Rooney Rule tries to do, of course, is just to ensure that you're giving everybody at least a hearing. And I think that the way the Sean Marks thing came down really sort of emphasizes the fact that nobody else really got that hearing. You know, nobody else was really considered. So I think that's from that angle, I think the NBA needs to and will consider that, something that Adam Silver is very, very sensitive about, always has been, and you know, so I think that's something that he's going to want to push when we get a Board of Governors meeting in April. I wouldn't be surprised to see that sort of be at the top of his agenda. It's not affirmative action or quotas or anything. It's not like that. It's just, you got to make sure that everybody's getting a fair hearing, and I think that that more and more we've seen that's not been the case in terms of the hiring of front office staff.
Great. Hey, we're not going to let you go without letting you plug anything. So you got anything good coming up in the sporting news? Anything you're working on? You want to let us know about?
Yeah, you know, we're working on some stuff about the Miami Heat. We'll be interested to see what they do going forward. And if I can plug, I've got a book out, too, called Fun City. So I'd like to plug that if people want to find it. It's more about New York in the 60s, but I think it's a pretty nice read. So I'd like to plug that as well.
Absolutely. It's called what now? Fun City?
Fun City, yeah. It's about Joe Namath and New York in the 60s. So a little bit of a different, context for me, but the one that I enjoyed doing.
Cool. Awesome. And where can people find you on social media?
Just at Sean Devaney, S-E-A-N.
Great. Well, Sean Devaney from the Sporting News, really appreciate you taking a few minutes out to join us on the show. You're our first guest. You're our first ever guest on the Rain Jays podcast.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening then.
All right, Sean. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys.
So, Jay, one of the first things that stuck out to me from Sean was the value of Isaiah Thomas in his role in free agency. I know he said that everybody is available, and I think that jives with just about what everybody's saying. If it's for the right guy, everybody is available. But generally speaking, I think Isaiah Thomas is as untouchable as it gets for this team, considering who has been rumored to be out there. I really think it's interesting that he's the guy that he's so well-liked that the Celtics can kind of lean on him as part of a recruiting situation.
Isn't it funny? Because, you know, he was rumored to have issues with DeMarcus Cousins. He, obviously, there were chemistry issues in Phoenix. And then he comes to Boston, and everyone loves him. Like, he's giving hugs to Cousins at the All-Star game. Kevin Love is his former AAU teammate. Like, a lot of people really kind of flock to Isaiah Thomas. He's got that infectious smile. He's got a really open, friendly personality. And I do think a lot of people like him. I don't know if that'll make a difference ultimately, but there are definitely people who like him. And when you go around the league, you know, Gary Tanguay and Greg Dickerson aside, people really respect what he's done. And every team, when they come into Boston, game plans for Isaiah Thomas. All the players around the league know Isaiah Thomas is hell to stop. And because of what he's done in Boston, because of that kind of friendly personality, he is, I don't want to say he's like this huge draw. He's not like LeBron James where guys are going to take pay cuts to play alongside him. But, you know, he is, among their players, he's obviously, I think, the greatest draw to play with. And I do think Brad Stevens is still the most important part when you're going out to free agents and saying, look, here's what we have. Here's what we can offer you. But, you know, having that young core and the success they've had since the trade deadline last year, since Thomas came to Boston, that's important when you're going after guys. You know, you look at possible free agent targets and, you know, a guy like Al Horford, as recently as last season, that looked like no way he was leaving Atlanta. The Hawks had won 60 games. The Celtics were just kind of bottom of the playoff team. Now the situations have flipped. And if they go after Al Horford and can say, you know what, Al, if you come here, we've already got the number three seed in the East. Add you on top of it. Then we've got other free agency money. We've got a top lottery pick from Brooklyn. Now maybe you're talking. So I do think Isaiah is important. I think the whole development of the roster is important. And Brad Stevens is important. And, you know, it's just a stable organization. They have a lot to offer. Obviously, the weather's not good. And the tax situation probably isn't as good as a lot of other places. But when it comes down to basketball product, they're going to have a competitive offer.
Yeah, and I think you're right on. It's when you think of playing in Boston, when you're from the outside looking in, playing in Boston, playing alongside Isaiah Thomas, you see the type of things that he can do as a free agent. If you're watching a Celtics game and you're watching that game yesterday afternoon, let's just say that you're whatever, a player out west and or a player with an off day, and it's a Saturday afternoon, you just want to watch an NBA game, you look at that team, Brad Stevens pulling another out-of-timeout play that leads to an easy basket. So you get that example of, wow, man, this coach just keeps pulling this stuff off. You see how hard they play, guys diving all over the place. Imagine playing with Marcus Smart in the backcourt. Imagine playing with Bradley in the backcourt and alongside Isaiah Thomas and alongside Jay Crowder. There's a lot to like when you sit there. If you're let's just say you're Al Horford and you're wondering what your future will bring, that seems like a pretty good situation. Up and coming, a team that is really close to competing in the East, and when your main competition is only the Cleveland Cavaliers, it's not like there's three or four great teams in the East. There's just that one. And who knows what that one is going to be next year. I don't know. I think a free agent looking at this Boston situation, it's not a bad situation. When you look at across the league, who has, I mean, everybody's got money. Who has the right situation? Boston is in a really good spot.
Yeah. But I do want to caution that the free agent class isn't great. And, you know, obviously Kevin Durant's out there. There was talk on Twitter, which I thought was pretty – it was a fun day on Twitter when I think Nate Jones, at Jones on the NBA, tweeted something about how Boston would be the number one destination for Kevin Durant if – or should be the number one Kevin Durant destination if he wanted to go to the East. And Nate Jones – I don't think there was any inside information there. It wasn't a report. It was just speculation. And all of a sudden, like, everyone's chiming in, like, oh, yeah, Kevin Durant would look great on the Celtics. Oh, my God. It's just funny how that one tweet kind of shaped how, like, the rest of the day went on Twitter. And then pretty soon everyone was daydreaming about Kevin Durant. And that was just really funny. I had a chat. This was toward the beginning of this year. And the Celtics thought they had no chance with Kevin Durant and very little chance with Al Horford. Now, you know, maybe that their situation with Horford could be better. But after those guys, and maybe Mike Conley, who I'm not sure he fits because he's older and plays the same position as Isaiah Thomas, but it's not a deep free agent class, and there's going to be a ton of teams with money. So free agency may not be the best way to go. I think a lot of it is going to come down to the trade market, and a lot of it is going to come down to where that Nets pick falls. The Nets pick right now, it looks like they're probably going to finish fourth in the lottery standings because Phoenix is just free falling. Danny Ainge must be like, Ryan McDonough, what the heck, man? How did you let that team get so damn bad? Because every Phoenix loss is hurting the Celtics Nets pick. But, you know, it'll still be a top seven pick. It'll still have, I think, an 11% chance of landing number one overall, a 37% chance of landing in the top three. And, you know, that's a huge piece. And Ainge has shown, even if it falls out of the top three, if it's number five where it was in 2007, he turned that into Ray Allen. And obviously he needed to attach some other pieces to it. But Celtics have a lot of pieces. They aren't lacking for trade pieces. They need that upper-level talent. And that's what they'll be looking for this summer. And there could be some interesting opportunities out there.
Well, this brings us to some of these Twitter questions. We got a lot of Twitter questions, by the way. Thanks, everybody. Let's work some of these in because they're relevant. At Fever Green, who, what are the Celtics' three most valuable assets? And he says, number one, the Brooklyn pick. Number two, Marcus Smart. Number three, Jay Crowder, because of their contracts. So if you had to rank the Celtics' top three assets, does that sound good to you? That doesn't sound like a bad top three.
That might be right. I'm Isaiah Thomas has a really good contract too, but it's not as long as Crowder's. So he's up there too. And I do think he's more like team specific, how valuable he is. I think any team could use Crowder because he could play the three or the four, or whatever, wherever you want to play him. Whereas Isaiah needs the ball in his hands and he needs to be that scorer to be at his best. Obviously he's going to be good. Even when he was in Phoenix and he was a third guard off the bench, he was really efficient, really productive. But he's more so when he has the ball, like he does in Boston. It's been such a good fit in Boston. But I think I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I'm assuming that Isaiah Thomas is staying. So I don't want to rank him as an asset because I don't think the Celtics want to get rid of him.
But they don't want to get rid of Smart or Crowder either.
Right. So I don't know. I think I think this Celtics pick, the Brooklyn pick, is pretty valuable. And it's, look, we have to wait to see what it is. If that pick ends up being the number one pick, then that's a game changer. That completely changes what we think about a lot of things. So
that's that is a franchise changer. And then all of a sudden, it's like the guys like the Kevin Love and whoever else, all of a sudden the teams that have been reluctant to trade guys like that, maybe even DeMarcus Cousins, it's like, oh, that's the number one pick. Like now that's automatically going to be either Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, whatever. And that's a completely different conversation than what it is right now, where you don't know where it's going to land. So, yeah, Ainge always talks about how things could have been different in 2007. If instead of getting the number five pick, he had gotten the one or two pick. And not just because he could have either drafted Kevin Durant or Greg Oden, but because it would have opened up so many trade possibilities. And instead of having to attach, you know, Delonte West, Ryan Gomes, Al Jefferson to the number five pick, and ultimately in the KG trade, then you could have gotten maybe one of those guys. You could have held on to Al Jefferson and still gotten, you know, Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, or some similar version of that. So that, I mean, if that pick, if they get really lucky and that pick lands number one, or I think number two, because I do think this is a two-player draft, a two-star draft. That's the way GMs look at it. That is an absolute game changer. And then you still have all the young talent there already in Boston. And to just either add that number one pick, I think we've talked about this, whether we would keep the number one pick or trade it for a more established talent.
Well, yeah, it would have to be a star player. Like I'm not opposed to trading a number one pick, even in a draft like this where people are very high on those top picks, because it's still going to take 2-3 years for that kid to become what he is. I mean, even you look at Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, he's had some great games, but it's still taking him some time to grow into the NBA. So I'm not opposed to trading that pick, that player, for a top-notch free agent, sign-and-trade type of deal situation. But that changes, obviously, the caliber of player that we're trading him for. So,
and it would have to be young, too. I think that's really important because, I mean, you look – I'm sure Cleveland already regrets trading for Kevin Love, and Kevin Love is not an older guy by any stretch. But I'm sure they already regret trading Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love, or at least a small part of them wonders what they could look like, not just now, but for the next however many years with Andrew Wiggins, Kevin Love, and LeBron James. Or
Kyrie
Andrew Wiggins, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James.
Right.
Yeah,
would be interesting. That would be interesting, especially because LeBron has so many minutes, so many miles on those legs that it'd be kind of, I think, the ascension of Andrew Wiggins and the decline of LeBron James would kind of coincide. It would be kind of nice for them to have LeBron kind of be able to back off a little bit, and you can give Wiggins more of the load, and those times where LeBron backed off, it wouldn't be so detrimental to the team. But they didn't. Obviously the ripple effect from that would have been Love would have come to the Celtics, because the Celtics had the best deal on the table until Cleveland got Wiggins, and that changed everything. But if they decided to keep Wiggins, then Kevin Love would have come to Boston, and that was with Rondo still here. And so imagine the ripple effect. Rondo may never have been traded. Jay Crowder might have been developed in Dallas. Isaiah Thomas, who knows if he would still be in Phoenix or if he would have gone to Miami. So many questions, so many different things that could have gone wrong.
I think it's also neat to wonder whether Golden State ultimately would have caved and included Klay Thompson in a Kevin Love offer. Because that would have changed everything.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't have gotten that incredible Golden State-Oklahoma City game where Steph Curry, I was sitting on my couch by myself, literally all alone by myself in my living room, laughing hysterically. I was just laughing. It was absurd. The game winner from 35, where Enes Kanter, you look over on the bench and he just shrugs like, oh.
Before the ball even goes through the hoop.
He knew it.
He's like,
he
knew it. Man.
He knew it. He's like, oh, man, Steph did it again. Just another ho-hum 37-footer from the moon. I mean, it's unreal. He takes shots no one in the world would even take, and they're good. They're great shots.
That shot.
I just read a stat saying that this month he's been so efficient that basically every shot he takes, every single shot, is the equivalent of a LeBron James layup. Like, that is just obscene.
We're witnessing, pun intended, this transformation. What the best offensive player in the league is like. That shot, he measured that shot. That shot that he took was exactly the shot that he intended to take. It wasn't like the Marcus Smart failed buzzer beater from the other night, where he just ran as fast as he could, as far as he could, before he had to take whatever shot was there with that much time on the clock. Steph Curry got his steps. He got his steps together. You could see he was like, all right, this is it. Got him 1-2, boom, released it, and that's exactly what he wanted to do. And
yeah, he had like 3 seconds left when he caught it, and he was in no rush. Like, most guys would try to, like, sprint toward the hoop, maybe try to draw a foul. Like, remember what John Wall tried to do against the Celtics earlier this season? And he just took his time. Was like, oh, whatever. I'll just get to my spot 40 feet away from the basket. And that's it. Game over. It's stupid. It is so stupid. And the crowd, it was just complete silence. Like, Stephen Curry is a killer. He is a cold-blooded man.
Yeah, he's not nice, man. I was out. So I went out last night to I watched Deadpool, which was good. I still haven't watched any of your basketball movies, though. But I saw Deadpool last night. And then after the movie, I went to a Buffalo Wild Wings, sitting there, first of all, begging for the game to go into overtime. I was like, those commercials better be right. One of you better pull like the Phantom beer tap and get this game into OT somehow. And magically it did.
I'm not sure I believe you that you were at Buffalo Wild Wings. That's too convenient.
Seriously, I was. I would not lie about wings. I'll say a lot of things, but I would not publicly lie about wings. Yeah, I was at a Buffalo Wild Wings. Like, come on, man, the commercial's got to be true. And then Kevin Durant throws that crazy pass. And I got to say, the Warriors smart for trapping in the backcourt.
You know what's interesting about that is the Celtics do that all the time. And Ron Adams, who runs the Warriors defense, is the same guy who worked with Brad Stevens in Stevens' first year. So that kind of ties into the Celtics. The Celtics do that all the time, where they don't go for the foul right away, and they kind of try to make you scramble and go for that steal. And Kevin Durant just freaked out, absolutely freaked out. As much as the Warriors just earned that game, the Thunder must be like, what the heck? Like, we allowed all that crap to happen. We didn't need to make Stephen Curry's legend grow. We could have just held onto the ball, got fouled, or found someone open, run out the clock, and instead, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
And even Durant, he fouled Iguodala.
Yeah.
What? He throws the ball away and then fouls Iguodala on a 17-footer.
That was a bad sequence. It was a bad sequence for KD.
And he had an unbelievable game. He was awesome. He is awesome.
Yeah.
But man, that was a bad sequence.
Now, that goes to show exactly how amazing Curry is. That no one is talking about the game that Durant had. No one's talking about Iguodala's two free throws to tie the game and send it into overtime. Everybody is just, I mean, it's all Curry all the time. I know some people are getting sick of it. I clicked on a SportsCenter tweet. They sent out some you know, they like to put some random stat out there, whatever. They're just doing what they do. They just tweeted something out, and people in the comments, in the mentions were, oh my God, they're so sick of hearing about Steph Curry. This is like the LeBron thing all over again. But
how can you be sick of hearing it? He does something new and ridiculous every night.
I mean, he
tied the NBA record for most threes in a single game with a 40-footer in overtime to beat one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah.
And he also has already set the single season record, which he had last year for most three-pointers. And it's February, and they've already clinched the playoff berth, and they're 53-5. 53-5. He is absurd. They are absurd. And Oscar Robertson. What? My brother texted me after Curry hit that shot. He said, yeah, yeah, yeah. But Oscar Robertson would have pressed up to half court, and he never would have gotten the shot off.
Yeah, I know. Big O. Look, you got to respect a guy that was as legendary as Oscar Robertson. But
look, you can respect everything he did while saying he is a clown for saying what he said about Stephen Curry. I know, like, everybody who moves on from whatever it is, even like I look back at high school basketball and I'm like, well, in my day our teams would have killed all you guys. But come on, like, if you can't recognize Stephen Curry's brilliance, what kind of brilliance are you going to recognize? Sit down, grab some popcorn, grab a beer, and just enjoy it, man. Like, if you cannot appreciate what he's doing, you can't appreciate anything in the world.
I know, honestly,
like that is the most joyful thing in the world to watch Stephen Curry do what he does. I was laughing, like hysterically laughing by myself, doing nothing. And that's what he does.
We should probably
talk about the Celtics. So let's go back to the Celtics.
I will mention, and this is how we'll do it. Celtics Mike actually tweeted, says, on Raining Jays, please talk about the game, that Golden State OKC game for 5 minutes, which we just did. So that was for Celtics Mike.
We got you, Mike.
And then Michael Roy asks, is Steph Curry real life? And so I think
we've already answered that, and it is no.
No,
no way.
Not real life. I don't know what he is, what planet he came from. Here's how we get back to the Celtics. Does Celtics Warriors finals go 7 games? That comes from John Harris.
I say yes.
Yeah.
Seven.
All OT.
Only because John's at Buffalo Wild Wings, though. Otherwise, it would be a sweep.
Man, I got to call them up. This is a total missed sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah.
I've name dropped them a bunch of times here, and I had to pay full price for my food last night.
I'm sure Buffalo Wild Wings is really kicking themselves that they couldn't sponsor the Rain and Jays this week. Huge missed opportunity for them.
Well, we'll have to get on that. So, okay, back to the Celtics and some of these Twitter questions. Harley Harrison asks, do the Celtics miss Kelly Olynyk more than expected?
I don't know about more than expected. I think, you know, everybody knew how important he was, I think, to that second unit. I do think one thing to keep an eye on, that one of the Celtics' most reliable lineups recently when Kelly Olynyk was healthy was that four bench with Jarebko, Kelly Olynyk, Marcus Smart, Evan Turner, and then Avery Bradley. That lineup for the season has played 125 minutes, which is actually the second most used lineup the Celtics have behind the starting lineup, and has outscored opponents by 19.2 points per 100 possessions, which is huge. Now, recently, Tyler Zeller's been playing with that group, and they've actually been outscored by opponents. And it's a super small sample size. Obviously, a lot of factors go into that. But that's something to keep an eye on, because that was a killer, killer bench lineup that really extended leads or took back the lead in a lot of games and really changed games. So now with Tyler Zeller, things are a little different there. And there's not the same spacing for Evan Turner and Marcus Smart to create. And I do think that it's a pretty big issue. Maybe it won't matter as much because they're on a homestand for a while, and they still have other ways to win. Obviously, they have a lot of depth, but Kelly Olynyk's absence definitely matters. Because I mean, before he went down, they were kind of playing their best basketball of the year, and I think they've played quite as well since then. But you know, they've still won a few games, and they've won two straight at home and 10 straight overall, but two in a row now, and they still have three more on this homestand, and then they go to Cleveland for one game, and then they're back home for two more. So an important part of their schedule right now to kind of build out their lead for that number three seed. Because they're starting to talk about home court now. Home court advantage, that's a thing. It's a real thing, and it looks like they're in the driver's seat, but I think this homestand is really important for them to kind of keep that lead and maybe extend it if possible.
Yeah, I think it'd be huge if they could do that. Yeah, I agree that we've talked about this, that Kelly Olynyk is definitely missed. I wrote about it this morning in the morning dump that the spacing that he brings is very important. But that they've also got a pretty good coaching staff, I would say, and they can figure things out. So they're doing all right. And I wonder, you know, it's kind of curious if Tyler Zeller is going to start working on extending his range at some point over the summer. Like, is he going to – it seems
– You know what's funny? Just the other day at practice – he was shooting above the break threes and trying them. And one of the coaches was like, yeah, okay. and he said, no, not from here. He said, but I've got the corners. And so he is trying to extend it. I don't know how long it will take him. Brandon Bass, it took him, you know, a year plus to even feel comfortable trying to shoot it. And even then, he rarely shot corner threes and never above the break threes. But who knows? Guys like that, he's never shot longer than, you know, 16, 17 feet. He's not the type of guy who shoots, like, on the line like Sullinger does. He's closer in most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, he's a couple feet in. But, look, it's still, at that point, he's 3 feet. You move 3 feet back. And I mean, it makes a huge difference as far as, I don't think people realize how far away that three-point line really is until you get on a basketball court and you shoot. You try to shoot from that spot, it looks closer on TV. You get on the floor and you try to jack up one of those things, that's not an easy shot to make, which makes the Steph Curry madness even crazier. But when you're on the court and you realize how far away that line is, you're like, oh man, how do guys do this with any regularity? But I'm sure every big man sees the writing on the wall. And you have to evolve. And a guy like Zeller, I think, has the potential to extend his range because he can hit those long mid-range shots. That's not impossible to ask for him to move back 3 feet. It's just a matter of getting the feel and the timing and all of that. But he could do it. Well, look, if Amir Johnson can do it every once in a while, then I don't see why Zeller can't. He's a good shooter. He's good for mid range. So it's not unthinkable, not tomorrow, but over the summer, and maybe one of those things. And talk about increasing his value. If he can do that, and the Celtics see that he can do that, maybe they bring him back. Maybe he just next year we see a little bit different iteration of the Tyler Zeller experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new world, but you've got like Louis Scola firing threes for Toronto. It is a new NBA world. While we're talking about, I mean, I just got off the rails with Louis Scola, so I think I'm going to bring things back a little bit. I want to shout out a couple of guys who we don't really talk about a lot because a lot of the times they seem to do the same things every night. Their offense is mostly a factor of a lot of it is a factor of their other teammates who are getting them shots. Avery Bradley and Jared Sullinger over the 11 games in February. Bradley, 16 points, 48% from the field, 45% from three on six attempts per game from three. That's huge. To get that out of him, plus his defensive production, huge. Jared Sullinger, who had struggled with his field goal shooting for a long time, in the month of February, 12.5 points, 8.3 rebounds, 51% field goal shooting. Those guys have played really well lately. And I think they've been really important to the boost of offense. And maybe, you know, they've been a factor of the boost of offense where everybody else playing better offense has helped them. But those guys are playing really good basketball. I think I just wanted to point that out, throw that out there. We probably don't talk about those guys enough because they seem to do, even when they don't play well, they kind of seem to do the same things every night. And but they deserve to be mentioned.
No, you know what? It's a good point. And I think Sullinger has definitely stepped up and improved a lot lately. So very worthy of being mentioned. At Simp Nation asks, can you talk about Jordan Mickey and what he needs to do to get playing time? Is there another injury needed? And then he says, to me, he reminds me of Amare. Do you agree? It's a hell of a comparison to make for a rookie who hasn't played.
He's played literally a minute and 47 seconds of meaningful basketball in the NBA this season.
Right. And so, I guess the...
And Amare is like one of the most athletic dunk machines of all time when he was in his prime. So... Yeah. He averaged like, didn't he average 40 on the Spurs in one playoff series? Let's calm down.
I think he might have just been saying body-wise, kind of stylistically. I don't know. I don't have a real good comparison for Jordan Mickey. But I think the Celtics, there are a couple things going on. Like last week we spent a lot of time talking about how Mickey needs to play. And it doesn't matter. They should work him in there more. I love that he got some meaningful minutes a couple games ago. But now, you know, it's still not happening with any regularity. But they're also trying to win. They're the third seed, and I think Brad Stevens really sees an opportunity here, and the Celtics see an opportunity here to have some real success. Even though no one really feels like they're going to go to the conference finals, but they could. It's not impossible for that to happen. And when you're this far along in your development, the success can be spun to potential free agents by saying, hey, look how close we got. We got one guy who just made his first All-Star game. He's 5'9", and you know that's our best player. And we did all of this with guts and grit and all the other stuff that KG used to say. Now we need you, and we get over that hump. That's a hell of a selling point to a free agent who, tell me, if you're a free agent, if you're out there hunting for a job and somebody tells you you're the missing piece to making this organization great, that makes you feel pretty good. So I can see that the success is important in that way, even though realistically playing Jordan Mickey regular rotation minutes for a game just to kind of see where he is, I don't see the issue with that. But I don't think he's going to get much time unless the matchup dictates where the Celtics feel like his skill set will help them win the game. I don't think they're in any hurry to give him minutes.
I think it would be more like foul trouble or something like that. And while we're on the concept of foul trouble, I really appreciate what Stevens does when players pick up a lot of fouls, which is he doesn't do anything. He leaves them on the court and he lets them keep playing, because most coaches sit guys, you know, as soon as they pick up their second foul in the first quarter or their third foul in the second, guys just send them right to the bench. And a lot of the times you can actually limit the minutes your player could have played by doing that. You, instead of letting them play and let them pile up minutes and see what happens, and in the meantime they're on the court, you sit them on the bench and you give them no chance to stay on the court. Stevens goes the complete opposite way. Marcus Smart picked up his third foul the other day. He stayed on the court. Jay Crowder has been in foul trouble a few times. Stevens lets him stay on the court. And I really think that's the best way to deal with foul trouble, because a lot of times you hurt your guy by putting him on the bench, and you limit the time he could play and the amount he could produce. And Stevens is just like, whatever. And I think part of it is because he has such a deep team and there isn't a huge drop off if, say, Smart picks up his fourth foul or whatever it is. But I love that mentality. I don't think enough coaches use that.
Yeah, and there's a trust factor to that too, because you have to trust your player to not pick up that extra foul.
Although I'm not sure he trusts them. I think he knows they're hackers. They've been hackers all season, and they continue to hack no matter how many times he tells them that the Celtics need to stop fouling so often. So I'm not sure it's the trust. I think it's more that he just wants to maximize the minutes, and he thinks that playing a guy through foul trouble is the best way to do that. So I do appreciate what he does there. One thing, I think, was the Minnesota game. That was this week, right?
That was after our last show.
Yeah, so back to the Minnesota game. We probably don't want to talk about the Minnesota game. Karl Towns, unreal. That guy's going to be unbelievable. But that's a bad loss. When you look back at this season, the Celtics have had a handful of really bad losses that are kind of head-scratchers and have kept them from being really, really, really good. Let's say they handled Brooklyn the two times they lost to Brooklyn, and L.A., the Lakers, when they lost to the Lakers, and Minnesota. Now, all of a sudden, like, even like the two seed would have been a possibility. But so those bad losses have really limited this team. As good as they've been and as competitive as they've been every single night, they've just had some really bad losses that have limited their record. And I don't know what it is about playing a bad team. And maybe it's just that their margin of error isn't big, and it doesn't matter who they're playing, they can lose. And their scrambling defense is tough to play as well as they play it most nights. It's tough to sustain that. But that is – they're going to look back. If they finish, you know, half a game or a game out of home court, they're going to look back at – handful of those games, including that Minnesota game, and being like, damn, I wish we could have grabbed that one.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but they also beat the Clippers. They beat the Cavs.
But you look at the Clippers and you look at them, like, yeah, the Clippers have this huge reputation. There isn't a lot of difference in, you know, their net ratings this year. Like, the way they've performed compared to the Clippers, when they have the Clippers at home, I think they were actually favorites against the Clippers in that game. So that's not like a huge upset like you think it is. Obviously, it's a good win and one that maybe you don't necessarily anticipate when that game happens, but that's not like an outrageous win. It's far more of an outrageous loss to lose to Minnesota, I think, than it is an outrageous win to beat the Clippers.
Okay, I mean, I look at a season and I agree. I agree that those are bad losses, and the Minnesota loss hurt. We know that the size hurts this team, and they should have won, but they also didn't have Kelly. Just certain things worked against them. You lose those games sometimes. The Nets losses I didn't like. The Lakers loss obviously was bad. But I just, you can say that in every season, and that's just how it goes. So you lose to teams that you should beat, but you also beat teams that you should lose to. So I think it tends to even out overall. So you can certainly sit there and lament the losses, and you're not entirely, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't think it's, I think it also, there's other sides to it. I think that some of those wins, I think that just, you know, it evens out.
Rational, John. You're rational. Happy to go ahead and be rational here. One thing I did want to talk about after that, so that Timberwolves game, obviously it was against Kevin Garnett. He didn't play. But so before the game, I'm talking to Avery Bradley about Kevin Garnett, and he loves Kevin Garnett. Like, just thinks Kevin Garnett meant the world to shaping his mentality toward the NBA and his work ethic, everything. But he's telling me before the game, I need to get a signed jersey from Kevin Garnett.
I need to get it today. I'm really excited about getting this Kevin Garnett jersey. I'm like, wow. A teammate. He wants to get his teammate signed jersey that bad. But it just, you know, Avery Bradley was 18 when he came in the NBA. The guys he was playing with, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, they were his heroes. Like, he walked into the NBA and played with his heroes immediately. So after the game, he talked in his little scrum, the media scrum. There was, I don't know how many reporters. And I went afterward to see if he had gotten the signed jersey. And he flashed it to me. I didn't even ask him. He flashed it to me with this huge smile, like so happy. So I followed him outside, and he showed it to me. And he said, with this warning, he said, I really shouldn't be showing you this, but you know how Kevin talks. So I look at it, and I mean, it was classic Kevin Garnett. Vulgarity had, like, he couldn't just write his name or write a simple message. He had to throw vulgarity. I'll let you guys use your imaginations about what it actually said. But on the two, it had his little vulgar message. And on the one, it had his name signed. And Avery Bradley's going to put it in his office next to other signed jerseys of Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo, and Jermaine O'Neal, which I think was, I guess, the starting five for most of his rookie season because Perk was hurt. So that is pretty cool. That was pretty cool. And I mean, I wish I could share with you guys what this Kevin Garnett signature said.
You got to say, you got to give us a hint.
I can't. This one thing I cannot share.
Okay.
But use your imaginations. It was incredible. It was classic Garnett. So I wanted to share that story because It was, first of all, I appreciate how enthusiastic Avery Bradley was about this signature of his former teammate. And then the warning, I shouldn't be showing this to you, but you know how Kevin talks. Amazing.
All right, let's get some rapid fire here because the show is running a bit on the long side, but it's been going so well, I just haven't wanted to stop. So let's just quickly answer some of these questions here that people have sent in. James Kopp, should the Celtics overpay for Al Horford in this offseason? He's not a max player, in my opinion. I think that a max offer to Horford, if he leaves the team, it's going to be a four-year deal rather than a five-year deal. So that some of the things that you were worried about or people were worried about in a trade, you don't have that fifth year. So 4 years of Al Horford, a little more palatable as he gets older than that.
I think it would be 33 in the last year of it, right?
And yeah.
33 in this day and age, like, that's really not that old. He's a guy whose game I think would probably age well. He's a really smart player. He can now shoot threes. And the thing about signing Al Horford and overpaying, as the questioner said, if you sign a free agent like that, you add him to the team and you still get to keep everybody else. It's not like you're giving up assets. You still have all the other assets to go ahead and trade for somebody or do whatever. And then you just have Al Horford on top of the current core. So yeah, sure.
I think
if you can go get Al Horford on a 4-year deal, and
the other thing
to, you have to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing to remember is that signing him as a free agent, it's 4.5% raises versus 7.5% raises that he gets every year. So you're really not spending anywhere close to the money you would have if you had traded for him and then re-signed him to a 5-year max deal. There's so much more money involved in that, which is why people tend to think that there's an advantage. You have an advantage when you trade for a guy like that because you can offer him so much more. So on a 4-year deal with the raises being close to half of what they would be otherwise, I think giving him a max deal this summer would be a no-brainer to me, especially when that doesn't even take up all of the free cap space that you have. And
yeah,
you get more cap space next year. So that, to me, I do it. I do it without a hesitation. Will Ainge, this is from @JiveJohn, will Ainge say, F it, and push all 2016 draft picks on the table for the number one pick?
I mean, if he could, probably, yeah. But the thing is, once you get that number one pick, it is tough to trade for anything, and especially for lower picks. You know, you have that number one pick, and it has a high percentage normally, shout out to Michael Olakande, of being a really good player. And the lower you get in the draft, the less likely it is that you're going to get a really good player. And that's just a fact. So, sure, I mean, I think he would love to trade them all for the number one pick, but unless the Celtics get, like, the number two or three pick and still have their other first-round picks, then maybe you'd have a chance. But it's really tough to move up once you're trying to get into that top one or two or three. I mean, the Celtics ran into that last year with Justice Winslow when they tried to give everything to get Justice Winslow, and they couldn't do it.
Right.
And they were just trying to move up to nine at the end of it. They tried to move up as high as number four, but by the end, they were trying to move up to 9-10 and still couldn't do it.
Well, I think, yeah, it's tough trading draft picks on draft day. It's like that's when that's the one time they hold the least amount of value. The only way I think the Celtics could pull that scenario off is if they had, say, the third pick and the eighth pick from Dallas. Like, if that was, like, the highest possible pick, because it's a top seven protected pick. So if they had 3, 8, and their own pick, and then they maybe could swing a trade for number one and maybe a future pick or something like that. But that just depends on who the number one pick, that whoever holds that pick, how they value the rest of the draft. If they like the guy that's at three, then you can do it. But if they are heart set on the on whoever it is, Simmons or whomever, then no, that's not going to happen. Sean asks, should the Celtics bother with any of the vet free agents, or should the focus be on developing end of bench guys? I assume that
like
means
buyout,
a role player.
Buyout market?
I think
he must mean buyout market, right?
It doesn't say.
Let's go both. Let's just buyout say market.
Buyout market. I don't think that there's any need to add anybody in the buyout market. But there are some guys that are interesting, but I don't think they need to add anybody.
Somebody like Joe Johnson obviously would have helped, but he's in Miami. Marcus Thornton kind of intrigues me a little, just because, like, he's been in Boston. He helped Boston. He's a shooter. They could use shooting. They could use more wing depth. And the only thing is, would he want playing time? Because they don't necessarily have it for him. If he wanted to come back to Boston as assurance, cool. But, you know, you can't guarantee guys like that. And I think that hurts Boston in the buyout market, even though they have the full room exception, which is more than the minimum salary offer most teams can throw out there. They don't have a lot of minutes to go around, and the guys that they'll be looking at, and there aren't a lot of intriguing options on the buyout market yet, I don't think, at all. But the guys that are, they probably want to play somewhere, and Boston just has a lot of good players already, and it's tough to crack their rotation. I think that probably hurt them when Joe Johnson was on the market, because he looked there and was like, you know what? I have a more obvious role somewhere else where I don't have to be competing against Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart and Evan Turner and Avery Bradley for minutes. And that's just how it goes. So I don't think there are a lot of guys out there that will crack or would crack the Boston rotation. And I don't think they're going to add somebody who just to add somebody. It would have to be someone who they think could fit in chemistry-wise, who they think will help them on the court.
Yeah, I think a shooter, like you mentioned, would be the one thing that I could see them trying to add. Otherwise, there's no need. And so, look, I'd love to see them develop the end of the bench guys. I'd love to see, obviously, Mickey get in there and RJ Hunter. I want to see what Rozier has. I want James Young to become something. But this situation,
it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
They're fighting for home court advantage.
Yeah, it's not going to happen right now.
This isn't the middle of last season when they were like, all right, let's throw Phil Pressey out there and James Young and see what happens. They're in the stretch run of and trying to get home court advantage for the first round of the playoffs. They're not going to all of a sudden sit there and be like, you know what, let's throw Terry Rozier and RJ Hunter out there for 10 minutes apiece and see what happens. Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
No, nope, nope. Let's see. this new Twitter account called @CelticsHotTakes, which is just...
That cracks me up, by the way. Celtics Hot Takes has cracked me up.
Yeah.
There are very few Twitter accounts like that that are well executed.
Yeah.
But Celtics Hot Takes so far has kept a smile on my face. So Shout out to Celtics Hot Takes, whoever you are.
Whoever it is. Yeah. That it's funny because they're basically, if Tanguay was like legitimately trying to make these arguments, that would be the Celtics Hot Takes. But this actually seems like a serious question. How useful can these analytics really be if Evan Turner's eighth in VORP, value over replacement player, ninth in BPM, and 11th in win shares for the team? Other than saying Turner's playing pretty well right now, I don't know.
Well, I think, first of all, Celtics are really deep. And second of all, his numbers are hurt because he spent too much time with David Lee. Too much time on the court with David Lee has hurt his advanced numbers this season. He is much improved. Turner is much improved as a defender. He is starting to score efficiently. He's won them a lot of games, as I said earlier, in clutch moments. But he played on the bench with David Lee, and David Lee dragged down everyone's advanced numbers.
Everything.
It's unbelievable how much he dragged them down.
But they were, I mean, yeah, but Turner, I don't know. At the beginning of the year, I guess we can blame it on Lee because he was
blame just, everything on David Lee. That's just been my philosophy in life lately.
Let's do that. Let's just blame it all on David Lee. So he dragged down everything, everybody's analytics, everything. Let's see, one more Twitter question, and then I got a couple of things here. We're back to the Golden State game. Where does Warriors Thunder rank among best NBA regular season games ever?
Well, I'll just end it. It was awesome, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was. It's in the team picture of best regular season games of all time.
Yeah,
I
will say this, from a standpoint of quality of play and superstars superstarring and drama, there were very few games I've ever seen that have even come close. So it was incredible. It was awesome. And I'm very, very, very grateful that the Celtics had a 3 o'clock tip so that I could watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was on prime time. It wasn't one of those 10:30 starts. It was good. That was great. Okay, well, let's wrap it up with a couple of final notes, a rant, if you will. No,
not a rant.
It's just kind of more of the same crap. This Isaiah Thomas, Greg Dickerson, Gary Tanguay stuff. People mentioned it. People tweeted it to us. So I will just say that if you're paying attention to those guys for anything Celtics, then it's almost your own fault. Because they're not, and I don't know what happened to Dickerson. Dickerson was good, but these guys, go ahead.
I think what happened is they value Isaiah Thomas, from where I'm sitting, they value Isaiah Thomas kind of like everyone else does, where he's really, really good offensively and has some defensive shortcomings, and there are other players in the league that are better than he is, and he knows that. Isaiah Thomas, right now, I don't think he's an all-NBA player. He wants to become one. He's said that's one of his goals. I think the problem is that they just delivered the message so harshly, like he will never be a star. I think Dickerson kind of meant that Isaiah Thomas, like he even said later in his segment, Isaiah Thomas, every team needs a guy like Isaiah Thomas, which it's weird to say he's not a star, but every championship team needs a guy like him. You know, when you think about that Celtics team that won the title in 2008, Isaiah Thomas is different than Ray Allen, but at this stage, like he's just as good as Ray Allen was those years, right?
Well, just as good. Close.
Better.
Okay. I'll put him in the same realm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he can be part of your championship core. I think.
Yes.
He's an incredible offensive talent. If you look at his fourth quarter offensive numbers, they're absurd. He's averaging more points per 36 minutes in the fourth quarter than any human NBA player. And by human NBA player, I am excluding only one, and that's Stephen Curry. So he is averaging more points per 36 minutes than Kevin Durant, LeBron James in the fourth quarter. And he's doing it super efficiently. So, Isaiah Thomas can absolutely be part of a championship team. It's just you need to have better talent around him. And I think in Boston, he absolutely fits right now. And I think he will fit. He can the guy can play.
Yeah. My bigger issue is that, like you said, the way it's delivered, and this is more Tangway than Dickerson. I think Dickerson was speaking more matter-of-factly. Tangway is a troll. And I've had him on a podcast before. I've had him on a show. We talked about it, and he admits it, that he has an opinion, and for radio or TV, he ramps up the volume to 11, and that's what he does, because that's entertainment value, which I hate, and I told him that, and I continue to hate that. Be genuine. When I say something, if I'm passionate about it, it's because I passionately believe it, and I'm not turning things on just to troll people and get reactions. You know, sometimes I'll make a joke and try to, you know, add some effect for that, but I'm not going out there trying to troll players on Twitter and make these huge definitive statements just so people can react to me. If people want to react. That's fine. If they don't, but I'm telling you genuinely what I feel at this moment in time based on the information that I have. And that Tangway doing what he does, I don't think that's sustainable, and I think there's a reason why that he's stuck at CSN and he's not getting other jobs at ESPN or doing whatever. Like he's got this little shtick and he's trying to get these reactions, and it takes away from him actually being good at what he does. All he's good at is the Felger and Maz crap. We're going to say something provocative just so you can be mad at me, and that's how we're going to get our ratings. That's crap. I hate it. So I would just advise.
Tell us how you really feel, John. Don't hold back.
Don't listen to those guys. Don't follow them on Twitter. Don't pay attention to what they say on the TV, because it's only infuriating.
Don't hold back, John. I'll say this. Tangway is I don't know him personally. I'm not even sure I've ever been introduced to him or introduced myself to him. He rarely ever comes to Celtics games. I've heard he's a great guy. I will throw that out there. Heard he's a great guy. The tweet at Isaiah Thomas bothered me. That was the one part. Like, say what you want on TV. That's your job. Why tweet at him? Like you're not a great player. What does that do except further rile people up?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly why he did it. Let me say this. I have met Gary Tangway in person. I've interacted with him. When I used to work at WBZ-TV in Boston, he would fill in as a sports guy every once in a while. He is a good guy, and he's smart, and I've actually had basketball conversations with him where he actually can talk intelligently on basketball. He just chooses not to in this forum, and that's what really bugs me, because it's not genuine. He doesn't think the things that he's saying all the time. He might think it a little bit, but then he really ramps it up so people can react. That's the part that bugs me. So it's disingenuous, and I'll never enjoy that at all. Maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe people do like that, and they just want to yell at somebody. But
while we're on the topic of trolls, Phil Jackson just sent out one of the most absurd, and if he is trolling, brilliant tweets I've ever seen. ever. I mean, this is unreal. This is, I'm just reacting to this for the first time while we're recording this. Phil Jackson, who has 11 championship rings as a coach, never seen anything like Stephen Curry, remind you of Chris Jackson / Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who had a short but brilliant run in NBA? Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, that is the comparison we're throwing out for Stephen Curry? Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf? Come on, Phil. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. That's incredible. That is how you troll.
That's Phil Jackson is good at that. He's very good at that.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to mention is about Delonte West, who seems to be having some problems. And a few people, Jack McMullen had the comments. He needs help, and he's not a punchline. I'm glad that she said that. I just wanted to quickly add my voice to that. That Delonte West has been very famously dealing with mental issues, bipolar issues, and it's somebody. I hope he gets the help that he needs, not even in a, you know, so he can play basketball again, but just so he can live life like normally without these issues and not come back and be on the internet for wandering around with his shoes off or anything like that. So, you know, I just hope he gets better. I think Boston still loves Delonte.
Yeah, that's a sad situation. What's going on over there? So hopefully these are just isolated incidents. And as you said, he gets help, gets better, and can kind of take control of his life again, because he has had issues with bipolar disorder or whatever it was, whatever his health disorder was in the past. And just sad. You don't want to see a guy like that. And it seems like a pretty good guy in most cases, but he just has these kind of bizarre things that he's done, including the time when he was in Cleveland and got arrested.
Yeah.
So hopefully he can just kind of get everything under control and get his life back, regain control of his life. And
yeah.
Poor Delonte, man. As you said, not a punchline at all.
No. We're pulling for you, Delonte, and we hope you get better. That'll do it for the show. There's a whole lot of show today. There's a lot. Thanks to Sean Devaney for joining us earlier. Thank you to John Duke for starting the show on a funny note. I hope you enjoyed the joke. And I wanted to say, especially want to say thank you to all of the listeners who have been downloading, listening to the show. Our show numbers have been increasing basically every show. We're reaching certain milestones faster each show, and we're getting more listeners, and we really, really appreciate it. If you're listening on iTunes, I'm going to do what everybody does. Everybody in the podcast, we beg for 5-star ratings, but it really does help. If you find us on Audio Boom or Stitcher, if you go to the Audio Boom page, you can get our RSS feed and plug it to any podcasting app that you want, and it'll just come directly to your phone, however you want to do it. But we appreciate that. Thank you very much. Of course, if you haven't found us on social media, Jay is at by Jay King. I'm at Reds Army _John. Read Jay's stuff at masslive.com. He's doing a really great job over there. Read my stuff at redsarmy.com.
He's doing a really great job over there.
Just whatever, click. Your clicks sustain me. And that's it. We will see you next week on the Raining Jays Podcast.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speeds. See store for details.